This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom in the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and wow, some wild stuff going on. First of all, I want to get into, in this hour, at some length, this whole discussion of what's going on with the primary now that Hillary Clinton has claimed a victory. And we need to talk about these numbers and that the Willie Horton ad is rolling along. I want to tell you about that. Just a slight digression from that. Christy Todd Whitman, who was the head of the EPA at the time of 9/11, was out there giving reassuring statements to people. Oh, don't worry, everything's fine, the air is safe, when in fact she and the agency knew that people were being exposed to things that would kill them or could kill them. And that basically, you know, she lied and people died. Well, the court, the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, has said that her statements were based on conflicting information and on reassurances by the White House. In other words, Bush lied, and so she lied. And that she was not intentionally trying to harm people, so she's not going to go to jail. Meanwhile, the EPA staff, 60% of the EPA staff have personally experienced political interference. This is from a new study from the Union of Concerned Scientists released today. This is amazing. 60% of the staff have said they personally experienced at least one instance of political interference in their work over the last 5 years. We're seeing the same thing in the Justice Department. This criminal prosecution of Don Siegelman, and I mean criminal, like it's a crime that the Justice Department did it. It's a crime that the person who prosecuted him or you know initiated the process or participated in the process was the wife of the guy who was the campaign manager for the guy that in my opinion stole the election from him, the guy that he ran against for governor of Alabama. I mean, this is just so sick and twisted. We need to keep our eye on the ball of the Bush appointees, whether it's in the EPA or the Justice Department, right across the board. Speaking of the GOP, John McCain
is all upset, and Mike Duncan, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, all upset. There's an ad out now, and I shared this with you day before yesterday. I think it is worth revisiting. This is an ad in North Carolina, put together by the North Carolina Republican Party, and it features this little old lady, literally a little old lady, Linda Davies. In fact, she's described in several news stories as a little old lady. Shown in the ad, she looks like somebody's grandma about to serve tea, and instead it's just, you know, everything's going to blow up. And the ad is ostensibly to take down Beverly Perdue and Richard Moore, the former state treasurer and lieutenant governor, who are running, you know, in the state as Democrats. Okay. So, but she's, because they have both endorsed Barack Obama, and because Barack Obama went to this church, this is the ad that's running in North Carolina.
For 20 years, Barack Obama sat in his pew listening to his pastor.
And then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God Bless America.
Now Bev Perdue and Richard Moore endorse Barack Obama. They should know better. He's just too extreme for North Carolina.
The North Carolina Republican Party sponsored this ad opposing Bev Perdue and Richard Moore for North Carolina governor.
So, and that's the little old lady there at the end. And so, you know, McCain, oh, no, we're going to run a good, clean campaign. He says, there's no place for that kind of campaigning. The American people don't want it, period. And how did he convey that sentiment to Linda Davies, the little old lady in the ad, the one who's putting the ad out? How did he convey that to her? He wrote a letter. I don't know if she's received it yet. You know, sometimes it takes a couple days for the mail to get through. In fact, I'm not even sure he's mailed it, but he said he wrote a letter in which he said that.
And Mike Duncan, the chairman of the RNC, the whole national shebang, he left a voicemail for her. So these guys are really aggressive about saying, you know, this ad is tragic. It's terrible. This is not the kind of campaign the Republicans are. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. Or facetious, or both. So McCain, you know, they're you know, it's sort of like, please don't throw me in that briar patch. You know, I mean, they're you know, yeah. But here's a question. Shouldn't Hillary Clinton be condemning this ad? Perhaps she has by now. Perhaps she has by now, and hopefully she will. But here's a larger question. With this, there's this whole portrayal of Barack Obama that is happening, this re-portrayal, because most people don't know Barack Obama all that well. I mean, the people in Chicago know him quite well. The people in northern Illinois know him quite well. He's been in that, you know, he's a state senator for 12 years. But across the country, most of us, the first time we ever heard his name was 4 years ago when he spoke at the Democratic National Convention. And really, in the last year or so, there, you know, people are going, who is this guy? And the Republicans are out there trying to define him in advance. Hillary Clinton is out there trying to define him in advance. And I would submit to the Obama campaign, you guys need to be doing more work to define your candidate. Because the Republicans, here's the Willie Horton ad from the Swift Boat guys, from the Swift Boat guys.
Tamika McFadden Harris, murdered leaving church choir practice, cut down by gang gunfire while shielding her 6-year-old daughter. Mike Boyd, killed at 15, beaten with bricks after a gang member crashed into his car. Severo Enriquez, just 14 years old, when he refused to flash a gang hand sign, he was shot 5 times in the back. They all died in 2001 in Chicago. The Sun-Times called it urban terrorism and demanded action on gang violence. But that same year, a Chicago state senator named Barack Obama voted against expanding the death penalty for gang-related murders. When the time came to get tough, Obama chose to be weak. So the question is, can a man so weak in the war on gangs be trusted in the war on terror? The National Campaign Fund is responsible for the content of this ad.
Now, at the same time, the Clinton campaign is out there saying, hey, we've won. We've won. It's over. Not to worry. We won.
Very proud that as of today, I have received more votes by the people who have voted than anybody else. And I am proud of that because it's a very close race. But if you count as I count, the 2.3 million people who voted in Michigan and Florida, then we are going to build on that.
Now, here's the problem. I mean, obviously, you know, Barack Obama's name was not even on the ballot in Michigan. That's a problem. Michigan and Florida, you know, they're not supposed to count. That's a problem. But here's the larger problem in my mind. And again, I'm astounded, frankly, that the Obama campaign or the Democratic Party, for that matter, Howard Dean, have not tried to define the actual issue here. And the actual issue here is, how do you know what the will of the people is? Because ultimately, I think most small-D Democrats and most big-D Democrats want to know what the will of the people is. What do the majority of the people really want? And it seems like the popular vote would be it, doesn't it? I mean, you look back and you say, you know, yeah, Al Gore got 500,000 more votes than George W. Bush did in 2000. Seems like he should have been president. And, you know, there have been other examples. I think it's happened 5 times in U.S. history. But here's the problem. We have a bunch of states in the primaries who don't engage in the popular vote. Instead, they have caucuses. And whereas in a regular popular vote election, in a real primary, you might have, say you've got, you know, a million registered Democrats in a state, you might have, you know, 300,000, 400,000 show up and actually vote. But if you have caucuses where people have to show up and stand up and speak out, fear of public speaking is the number one phobia in America, or right up there with spiders. And you know, a lot of people just don't show up for caucuses. So you may have, say, 200 people, 500 people, 1,000 people showing up for the caucus.
Now, when they show up for the caucus, they are considered as voting. NBC, for example, is including the caucus attendees in their popular vote numbers. But what that means, basically, is that the caucus states are being, by and large, ignored. I mean, that's the bottom line. Let's ignore the caucus states because their numbers of the actual voters, the people who showed up for the caucuses, are going to be relatively small, even though there's all these delegates who went along with it. So there's that. What is the solution for this? I mean, obviously there's the short-term one. I think the long-term solution, and we should be talking about this right now, is in the next primary, let's have instant runoff voting.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The Tom Hartman Program.
So here's the deal. In this election, I mean, there's a very good probability, I would say, a very real probability that Willie Horton ads are not going to work, that Swift voting is not going to work, that the American people have heard enough of this stuff, that whether the nominee is Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, that that person is going to win the presidency. There's a very real possibility of that. And I think one of the early indicators of this is in the New York Times today, this story, in Mississippi, there's a vacant congressional seat. Trent Lott, you know, moved on to become, in fact, he just made his first $1 million, or his firm did, as a lobbyist. And so Haley Barbour, the governor, took the member of Congress, their congressman, Roger Wicker, and put him in the Senate to replace Lott. And so now they've got to refill his seat, this House seat. And a Democrat, Travis Childers, and a Republican, Greg Davis, were among six candidates. There were six people running for this seat, and there's going to be a runoff because neither one of them got more than 50%. But look at this. In Mississippi, this so-called red state, the Democrat got 49.4% of the vote. The Republican got 46.3% of the vote. Things are changing. It was noted yesterday that Julie Nixon Eisenhower, the daughter of Richard Nixon, has personally donated the maximum allowable limit, $2,300, to the Barack Obama campaign. And now we've got on the Larry King show, sitting side by side, Laura Bush and her daughter Jenna, and you could just see Laura Bush's face fall apart as her daughter says that she's not sure that she's going to vote Republican in this coming election.
Do you have a favorite between the two Democrats?
My favorite is the Republican.
That's Laura.
Yours too, I would imagine.
And Jenna?
I don't know. But I mean, you know.
Are you open to?
Yeah, of course. I mean, who isn't open to learning about the candidates? But
Yeah. Who isn't open to learning? And her mother's sitting there going, I'm not. You shouldn't be. Your father isn't. What are you saying? You ungrateful little wench. Or wretch, I guess, would be the word that she would. Oh, my. I mean, it's just, can you imagine what's going on in the Bush household tonight? Or last night? Anyhow, so a whole bunch of stuff on the table here. Hillary Clinton, obviously, you know, she's claiming she has the majority of the popular vote. This is disingenuous, frankly, and it basically says to all of those folks who voted in caucuses, sorry, you don't count. But nobody's pushing back on it. So, you know, I'll say it, and I'm not saying it as a Barack Obama partisan. I think both campaigns should conduct themselves with a level of candor and accuracy that we would all salute. And I frankly can't salute that as being candid or accurate. On the other hand, she's gotten a hell of a lot of votes. I mean, there's not an enormous amount of light. Now, there is enough light that it's going to be very, very hard, particularly with regard to the delegates, for her to win the nomination. But she's gotten a lot of votes, and she has a lot of support in this country. And she's a very good candidate and campaigner. Hillary Clinton is the Energizer Bunny of politics. I'm telling you, she is out there day after day after day with a smile on her face and all pumped up and really full of energy. And, you know, that's I'm looking at that going, whoa. And I think there are a lot of people, in particular, a lot of women, although certainly not just, a lot of people who are looking at that going, this is somebody who has
who is really, you know, challenging the conventional wisdom and is of, you know, male-run politics and all that, and she's a fighter. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. She's a fighter. And many people, I think, are saying, okay, if Obama is ahead, let's have a ticket that's Obama-Clinton, just like you had Kennedy-Johnson. LBJ was the older man. He was the elder statesman. He was the leader of the Democrats in the Senate at the time. He had every right and every reason to say, hey, no, wait a minute. You know, you're the young whippersnapper. I'm the old guy. I've been around the block 16 times. I got everybody owes me political favors. I should be at the top of the ticket. And you know, you can run for president in 8 years. But the fact of the matter is, Jack Kennedy had more delegates. And Lyndon Johnson became vice president. And there was a time, I think, you know, a week or two ago, a lot of us were saying, this is too much bad blood. This isn't going to work. I think a lot of people are reconsidering that ticket. But the point I wanted to make about instant runoff voting, let me just make this very quickly before we take this break, and then we'll get your calls in here and mix this thing up, is that with instant runoff voting, if we had instant runoff voting in the primaries, it would model it for the rest of the country. Now, I think it's extremely unlikely it's going to happen because both the Democratic and Republican parties do not like instant runoff voting because it allows third parties in general elections. But it is the most democratic way to do it. It's even better than proportional representation, so that you could go in and I could say, okay, my first choice is Dennis Kucinich, my second choice is John Edwards, my third choice is Chris Dodd, my fourth choice, and if the first choice doesn't cut it, then my vote still gets counted. You now then look at my second choice and say, okay, well, his second choice. So, and if your second choice doesn't make it, they say, well, what's your third choice? Okay, we'll take that one. And as, you know, so everybody's vote is continuously counted. You don't end up with a large number of people for all practical purposes whose votes are not counted. If you have three strong candidates, for example, you may end up with somebody who only has 35-40% of the vote holding the seat. That's wrong.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I'm that good feeling. I'm that voice. Yeah, you know who I am. Listen or not, it's your choice. Yeah, you know. You know who I am.
34 minutes past the hour. So here's the two activist, as it were, suggestions I have. Number one, let's seriously consider pushing the Democratic Party to use instant runoff voting. There's over 300 communities in the United States that have IRV. San Francisco is the largest. Instant runoff voting for the next set of primaries. It would be a wonderful way to model it. Yes, I know the big parties don't like it because it gives a little more opportunity to the Greens and Libertarians and other parties, but it is ultimately more small-D democratic. It is better for democracy. It's better for America. Let's model it in the primaries. And frankly, I think that we would get a cleaner, more rapid outcome. Rather than going with the Republican winner-take-all, which is even less Democratic, let's go and get more Democratic with instant runoff voting, and which will, by the way, resolve issues more rapidly than the current proportional representation or quasi-proportional representation that's being done by the party. And number two, let's have somebody point out the fact that if we're all of a sudden talking about the popular vote, then what we need to do is go back to those states where they had held caucuses and say, okay, if you're counting the number of people who showed up for the caucus as voters for your popular vote, what you really need to do is take the number of people in that state who are registered to vote. Let's say there's 1 million people in the state who are registered to vote as Democrats. And, typically the turnout would have been, say, let's just pull numbers out of the air, might have been 30%. So 300,000 people probably would have showed up to vote. But only 5,000 people showed up at the caucus because that's just the nature of the beast. So right now that state is registering as 5,000 voters. So we need to go back and say, but they would have had 300,000 voters if they actually showed up. And so let's allocate 300,000 voters to Obama and Clinton based on what the outcome of the caucuses was.
And if you do that, what you're going to end up with is Obama's going to have a massive lead in the so-called actual popular vote. But, I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. I think this is a disingenuous strategy by the Clinton campaign. I'm still waiting to hear why I should vote for Senator Clinton. And I'm surprised, you know, for example, I love her health program. I think her health plan is the strongest of the two. Why isn't she talking about that more? Why isn't she talking about the things that she's in favor of that would make me or anybody else want to vote for her rather than talking about, you know, gaming the system, basically, and allowing the Republicans to engage in swift voting? Henry in Illinois. Hey, Sam. Henry, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Very well.
That's good. Can you hear me pretty good?
It's a little faint. It's a bad cell phone, but go for it.
All right. The thing I want to say is this. Those two ads that you ran,
yeah,
you know, it did do its initial damage as for, you know, people perspective right off from Jump Street. But the reality of it is people got to understand, when Obama was in the Senate and he cast that vote, Governor Ryan already put a moratorium on executions in the state of Illinois because they had a law school that came in and reviewed the death penalty cases and kind of find out there was almost 30% of the inmates who shouldn't have been on death row anyway.
Right.
And because prosecutors and policemen hold the evidence and things of that nature.
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong, my recollection, and I'm not, you know, I don't live in Illinois and you do, wasn't that a vote on children being able to be subject to the death penalty? Wasn't that really
right.
The bottom line of the vote?
Right. Minors will be put on the death penalty, yes.
Right. And they don't say that in the ad. They say gang violence. But really what it was whether or not we're going to subject children to the death penalty in a state where they had already found, as you correctly point out, that as much as a third, as many as a third of the people on death row shouldn't have been there. And the Republican governor had said no more executions in this state until we figure this out. Well said, Henry. Thank you very much for setting the record straight. I appreciate the call and appreciate your listening. Ernie in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ernie.
Hey, I wanted to talk about this whole thing with Florida.
Okay.
I'm an Obama supporter, I'll say up front.
Okay.
I think the Obama campaign has to be a little bit careful with how they handle this Florida thing, because to me, I smell Karl Rove all in it.
How so? You mean not Karl Rove himself, but the kind of strategies that he would espouse?
Karl Rove inspired. Yeah, maybe even himself.
Huh. How so?
You know, a la Siegelman.
Well, no, there's not a federal prosecutor going after Barack Obama here. I mean, this is the Republicans in Florida were the ones who pushed through the earlier voting. You know, let's acknowledge that. But the Democrats went along with it. There's videotape of the Democratic, the guy who was the head Democrat in the legislature in Florida, essentially saying, you know, laughing about it and saying, yeah, you know, we shouldn't do this, but what the heck, we're going to do it. I mean, that was the essence of his message. So the Democrats in Florida bears
into it.
Yeah, well, you know, it may well be, but the fact of the matter is that they broke the rules and they knew what the rules were, and people were told your vote isn't going to count. And frankly, I think that the way it should be handled.
Look at what all these right wingers are talking about now.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all of a sudden, Newt Gingrich, Sean Hannity, and Rush Limbaugh are all worried about disenfranchisement.
I know. I know. The entire right wing, they're all out there.
Karl Rove said it himself the other day on TV.
Yeah, well, yeah. Ernie, you're watching way too much Fox. you're absolutely right. And I listen to right wing talk radio from time to time when I'm driving around, and I'll tell you, all they're talking about right now is Barack Obama.
And your enemies closer.
There you go. They are trashing Barack Obama as aggressively as they can. They're mostly what I'm hearing on right-wing talk radio is race. I mean, it's that's what they're doing. They're trashing Obama aggressively. Now, is that because they think he's going to be the nominee and they're trying to define him before he has a chance to define himself, so it'll be easier for McCain to beat him? Or is that because they want Hillary Clinton to be the nominee and because they think she'll be easier to beat? I honestly don't know. Or could it be that they figure, hey, heads I win, tails you lose. You know, either way, we're going to win. That's actually the more likely, I suppose, of the two. Robert in Phoenix, listening to KPHX. Hey, Robert.
Good show, Tom.
Thank you.
Two things. One, I think there's very little difference, in my opinion, between Hillary and Barack. I think they're both excellent candidates. I think the best chance we have against McCain is to put both Hillary and Barack on the same ticket in either order. But can I comment on the meeting that Harry Reid and other Democrat members of Congress had with pop star Shakira this week about about certain things?
Sure.
Okay. Apparently, Shakira, pop star Shakira, she's in with this global campaign on it for education. She wants money from the United States to help her cause. She is, from what I understand, you probably already know this, she's good friends with many world leaders, especially in the Middle East and in South America, where we're having problems with terrorists and the energy problems with the oil. Let's consider giving her what she wants if she can help us out. She's very charismatic. She knows these leaders, and I'm sure she could do a much better job than Condoleezza Rice. What do you think?
Frankly, I don't know enough about her or about the circumstances that you're talking about, Robert, to have an opinion on it. But, you got it out there, and we'll see. Maybe, now you've got my curiosity up, so I'll look around. Marcus in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Marcus.
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
I have a real quick little question here for you. If you have a president who's actually able to facilitate his entire will, desire throughout his entire party, and they kind of fall in line every single time, and we see what happens with like a Siegelman case here where, people seem to fall in line when things get said and done, then where is John McCain's rationale for being able to say, well, I'm against something and still have it happen or happen to occur if he's supposed to be the leader right now of the Republican Party?
Well, he sent a letter asking them not to run the ad.
Mm-hmm.
He sent a letter. And the guy who's the chairman of the RNC, he left a voicemail. So
the disingenuousness of this is just beyond all measure. And I really hope that, logic just kind of kicks into most people's heads and actually realize how false this really is. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, well, it's well said, Marcus. Thanks a lot. Bob in West Virginia. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good. What's up?
Hey, boy, that sure is funny about Jenna, eh?
Yeah. In fact, the last caller was, the Republicans are all in lockstep, and I almost interrupted him and said, except for the president's daughter.
Yeah. What was it? They were drunk last time?
Yeah. Well, who knows?
Anyways, here's my question. What do you think an Obama cabinet would look like?
I don't have a clue. I'm guessing that it would be, he has said that he would reach across party lines. He, as Bill Clinton had Mr. Cohen as his defense secretary, who was a Republican, as I recall, so it wouldn't surprise me if it was multi-party. I don't think that there's any racial litmus test or gender litmus test that probably he would pursue. I think he's going to be looking for the most qualified people, frankly.
You think we'll get enough Senate seats this time?
One can hope.
because that's what we need, man.
Yeah.
If we get Obama in
Well,
there,
we don't. We need more than that, Bob, because when the Republicans didn't have 60 Senate seats in the last Congress, they were able to get their judicial nominees through. They were able to get legislation through simply by filibustering, threatening to filibuster, threatening the nuclear option. What we need is strong leadership in the Senate, and in my opinion, Harry Reid has not offered that. We need a leader in the Senate who will stand up and say to the Republicans, okay, we got 52 votes. If you're going to try and block this legislation, or you're going to try and filibuster this legislation, you better bring a bottle of pee in here, because you're going to have to stand on the floor for the next 20 hours and filibuster this thing, or we're going to take a vote.
Hey, they did the same thing to us, man, when they had the majority.
Yep, exactly. Let's take it back and let them do an old-fashioned filibuster the way Strom Thurmond used to. But Harry Reid has been unwilling to do that. I understand he's got to get legislation through and he wants to get things passed and et cetera. But I think that on balance, the Republicans said right up front they were going to prevent the Senate from getting any business done. And then in the election, they were going to run against a do-nothing Senate. And they're doing it.
Tom Hartman. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So will the mainstream media, will the corporate media pick it up? It's over at factcheck.barackobama.com. Chicago Sun-Times editorial was written more than 3 months after House Bill 1812 was vetoed. This, they're saying, hey, Barack Obama was not tough on gangs.
Well, the Republican governor actually vetoed the bill. He said, in light of existing laws, constitutional concerns, and past history of erroneously sentencing individuals to death. That was the headline of the story about how he vetoed this piece of legislation. The Republican governor of Illinois vetoed it, and the Republican representatives admitted the bill was, quote, for the folks back home at election time, end quote. Yeah. So here's, it really is a swift voting. It really is a swift voting. Max in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Max.
Good morning. I want to go back to the actual Willie Horton ad and the Dukakis, Daddy Bush contest of years gone back.
Right.
In August of that year, I came upon, and I don't know if this is still a magazine, Ad Age magazine.
Yeah, advertising age is.
You know, all those kind of, broadcast age, frozen food age. I don't know if they're all the same company, but there was an ad. This can be checked out, and I might have it somewhere. But August of that year, I came across a magazine that was already a month old, as I recall. The producer of that ad, and I cannot recall the gentleman's first name, but I'm positive about the second name. His name was Falkenberry. Falkenberry Associates out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He produced the ad. Mr. Falkenberry was, this is my term that the ad mentioned, he was a convicted drunken driver. You might can say he was a serial drunken driver. That's my terminology. The Republican Party knew this at the time, but they felt confident it would not be a problem, which it wasn't. Now, what's driven me crazy then and over the years is why the Democrats cannot know these things. Would it have won the election? No, but maybe
I don't
irony,
think it would have discredited the ad even. I mean, because people
know,
are judging the ad on its own merits, and for that matter, I mean, it came out before the 2000 election that George W. Bush was a convicted drunken driver,
and
he still had enough votes to get the Supreme Court to throw it his way.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is, and I know, and I've been criticized before. Oh, that's irony. That's tit for tat. That's gotcha stuff. But you know, this is the kind of stuff they have used against us to discuss it between us and them stuff. And
but it's at the level of the personal, and that's why I think, frankly, that it wouldn't work, Max. I get your point.
It wouldn't work. But it. Yeah, that's a small item. What about all the big items when we didn't find...
Okay, isn't a better way to fight back by saying, wait a minute, this ad is wrong, here's how it's wrong,
and
how dare you... No, he didn't. And right now, Obama is not fighting back against these Swift Boat ads, and he needs to be doing the same thing. He needs to be, you know, the great outrage. The, I can't believe you're saying that. Don't you know what the real issues are? Don't you realize that the Republican governor of Illinois vetoed that piece of legislation? Because it was unconstitutional. This had to do with the execution of minors, and we had a problem in the state with the death penalty. I mean, you know, push back. Push back. Anyhow, your point is well taken. It's, okay, Dennis in Philadelphia. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, how you doing? I have to disagree with you a little bit. I think that it's a big mistake to start getting into trying to counter every piece of shit that comes his way as far as the...
I'm sorry. I understand your sentiment, but you used a word you can't use on the radio. We beeped it out. And Haven in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Haven.
Yes, sir. Hi. A couple of days ago, you and Ellen Ratner discussed Hillary Clinton's comment that Iran would be wiped off the map or something of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
When she was asked about a hypothetical.
Annihilated, I think.
Right. And you discussed whether or not it would be constitutional for her to attack Iran. And, you know, the government of Iran has really shown no inclination to attack anybody, much less Israel, much less with nuclear weapons. So the question to Hillary Clinton was really more of a revenge fantasy that had no basis in reality.
Well, I think it was, and this is the tragedy of American politics these days. It was an attempt to essentially out testosterone the Republicans. Out, I'll see your big guns and double them. I'll see your conventional and raise them nuclear. I mean, and I think that it's unfortunate that politics in this country are where they're at. To the point that a Democratic candidate, feels that she has to go down that road. Ray in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
I have three quick points I wanted to make. And I've been a lifelong Democrat and been active in the Democratic Party for over 45 years. First of all, I think caucuses are inherently unfair. I think the best things that can happen in this country is primaries, open them up a little bit so other people can participate. But caucuses are stacked against participation and are controlled by party bosses.
You ever been to a caucus?
Yes, I have. Several of them.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, I ran one in Michigan.
Okay.
That's the one where Wallace ended up getting elected in Michigan. Anyway,
that wasn't a caucus. That was a primary, and that was because Michigan has an open primary. I was living in Michigan when that happened.
Yeah, I know. Well, maybe it wasn't that one, but I did run one in the city of Hamtramck.
Okay.
Okay. Number two, I think the ads are very, very wrong. Okay, and I think people need to say that. But one thing I need to take issue with you about, and that is bundling the ads in the same breath that you're saying Hillary Clinton is guilt by association.
Well, here's the question that Keith Olbermann asked Rachel Maddow last night on Countdown. He said, if Hillary Clinton won't come to the defense of a fellow Democrat right now, you know,
why single out Hillary Clinton? I think all Democrats ought to be condemning those ads.
Okay, I agree with you.
Okay.
I agree with you.
The third thing that I would like to say is this. You've asked a question yesterday, and I wasn't able to get on the air, is could I support Barack Obama, and why would I support him? Yes, I could, and I would support him for two reasons. One, he's a Democrat. Two, because of the Supreme Court.
Right.
But I think
even though
it
you're
isn't
a Clinton
Barack
supporter.
Obama that's turning me off. It's the people who are calling the radio programs and trashing Hillary.
Yeah. Ray, I get it, and I'm over the Hillary trashing and the Obama trashing, frankly. I think it's time for us to have an honest discussion about this. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're in the Democracy Zone.
Democracy
with
Zone.
Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program. Program. Welcome to the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Accept no imitations. Tom Hartman.
We'll get back to our conversation of the primary and the politics of it all. We even have the good Reverend Hagee to hear from today. But first, I wanted to get back to a topic that we did about an hour on. I don't recall if it was earlier this week or if it was late last week, but it was about China. I just came back from Sudan, from Darfur, where the Chinese are selling weapons to the Sudanese government that are being used in a massive genocide. I spent 4 days in a camp with 45,000 people and one well and no electricity and no food as a consequence of those Chinese weapons. The Chinese are buying oil from the government in Khartoum, pumping it out of the south. Those areas where oil is being discovered are being bombed and people are being murdered. The Chinese providing the bombs. This was enough to cause Steven Spielberg to pull out of his participation with the Olympics Games. On top of this, the Chinese have a long history of imprisoning political prisoners, censoring free speech. This is a communist dictatorship. It is not a democratic, small-d democratic society. And the use of prisoners, political prisoners, as organ donors, people going over there now, particularly from the Middle East, going over looking for mostly livers. They show up your blood type and, oh, we find prisoner number 31412, perfect match. Take him out and shoot him. So I suggested that while we should not boycott the Olympics overall, because that would punish our athletes, And you don't really want to politicize the entire Olympic game. I think Jimmy Carter made a mistake in that. There is something to be said for joining with the president of France and the prime minister of Germany and a few other countries who have suggested that they're willing to do this in asking President Bush not to show up for the opening day ceremony, in part because this is a culture that honors face. You know, shame is a worse thing in Asian culture than guilt. We worry about guilt here. They worry about shame there. Jim Trepan is a Houston-based CPA wealth manager. He runs the largest equity investment research firm in mainland China. He's the editor in chief of the China Stock Digest, the author of the new book, Becoming Your Own China Stock Guru, The Ultimate Guide to Profiting from China's Economic Boom. His website, Tripon, TRIPPON.com. And Jim, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, Tom.
You just heard my riff. I mean, you know my position on this now. Your take on it.
Well,
before we get to that, sure. You know, the title of your book, Becoming Your Own China Stock Guru, The Ultimate Guide to Profiting from China's Economic Boom. Didn't I read in the Financial Times on Monday or Tuesday that the Chinese stock market has dropped about 30% in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, it was up actually 9% overnight last night. But we've had a totally different experience because you have to understand with China, you know, not everything is as it seems. There are actually two Chinese stock markets. There's the one that's inside mainland China that only the locals can buy into, which is the one that's tumbled so deeply. And then there are the Chinese stocks that trade in London or Hong Kong or New York where we buy them. And we've had a totally different experience than what the mainland investors have had.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's why last year we were the number one performing China investment newsletter, up 58%, because it is a totally different market. But yeah, I mean, I heard your intro to the program, and certainly, you know, I understand that China's not perfect, and there's a lot of issues with regard to how China runs their country and how they conduct themselves in the global landscape. But you know, I have a pretty different point of view as far as what we should be doing about the Olympics, because as you mentioned quite rightly, you know, the Asian cultures are one that saving face is very important. I mean, you know, if you want an example of how deeply that is held, look only to Japan, you know, who during World War II did atrocities online and on par with anything you saw coming out of Nazi Germany. They had chemical warfare experiments against the Chinese population.
Yeah.
They did
the rape of Nanking. Yeah.
Yeah. And here we are, you know, 70 years later, 60 years later, and to this day, the Japanese government has never apologized for all the genocide, for all the rape, for all the medical experiments they did on Chinese civilians.
Yeah, they're still trying to pretend that they didn't have the South Korean comfort ladies, you know, and all of that stuff. But, you know, point made and point taken, but if that's the case, then isn't that the strongest tool, the strongest lever that we have to not really hurt them, but actually influence them? I mean, when Spielberg pulled out of the Olympics, that was the week that I was heading to Darfur. And within 2 days, China had a five-person delegation in South Sudan meeting with President Salva Kiir, who I spent 2 hours with just a few days before, meeting with the president of South Sudan, the vice president of the entire country, to at least create the appearance that they were concerned about what was going on in Darfur.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that public displays from foreign governments is going to get you too far with the Chinese policies. I really don't. And it comes back to this whole, you know, Asian saving face culture. You have to study history a little bit and remember that over the last 200 years, China has been occupied at least four times militarily by foreign powers, by the Brits, by the French, by the Germans, and most recently and most probably abusively by the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to foreign powers publicly telling them what to do, they tend to push back and you don't get much action. I don't think that the meetings in Darfur can be tied, or the meetings in Sudan can be tied to Steven Spielberg as much as it could be by comments that they get privately, you know, by government officials, either in the United States or the rest of the developed world. I think if you want to get China to crack down on dissidents and crack down on countries around the world, the best way to do that is to wave your fist on CNN or any of the, you know, MSNBC or something like that, because all it's going to do is cause them to push back.
Why don't we just stop trading with them?
Oh, we can't afford to, Tom. I mean, let's.
Why don't we bring our jobs back here to the United States?
Well, I mean, it sounds great, and I mean, you know, I grew up in an.
Why don't we do what China is doing and impose import tariffs?
Well, you know, there are a lot of things we could do that would be a lot smarter than what we've done. I mean, I grew up in the Midwest in the 1960s, where one wage earner working a blue collar job could support an entire family. You didn't have to have both parents work to keep food on the table.
No, absolutely. And my dad worked in a tool and die shop for 40 years and been raised four kids. And,
yeah.
You know, that was in Lansing, Michigan. And their major customer was Oldsmobile. And half of my friend's parents worked at Oldsmobile. And yes. And
that was because we had
import tariff policies. We had protection for domestic industries that went back to the founding of this country. And just in the last 30 years, we've blown all that stuff away, and guess what? Everybody's moving to China. And
not just China, for other countries.
Sure.
I mean, in fact, now China is no longer the low-wage country. That's actually shifted to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And so all the textile plants have moved out of China. You know, the ones that used to be in North Carolina and South Carolina moved out of China, and they're moving to Vietnam, where it's even cheaper.
Right.
But I mean,
next it'll be Cambodia.
Great question. Yeah. But the reality is, you know, when people in China will work for $3 a day, you know, and auto workers in Lansing, you know, make $36 an hour, including benefits. You know, there's no way that those jobs are coming.
Then
down.
Why don't we do like the Chinese do? If you want to import a car into China right now, there's a 22% import tariff. If you want to import a Chinese car into the United States, it's a little more than 2.1%, the import tariff. That doesn't make sense to me. Right. So why don't we say if the labor in China is $3 an hour and the labor here is $30 an hour, or we'd like it to be $30 an hour, then for every hour of labor in a product, we're going to add a $27 import tariff.
Well, I mean, that certainly would make sense. Here's the practical issue.
Well, that's how it used to be. That's how it was for 200 years in this country.
No, I agree with you. I think the North American free trade deal has been a great way to loot the American middle class and shift jobs, you know, south.
Yeah.
But
we have about half a minute, Jim.
Well, but here's the thing. If we were to do that, we don't have the manufacturing capacity here today to replace those products. So what you're going to create is massive inflation for the middle class and the lower classes who can least afford it.
But you would also create massive increases in wages. I mean, I don't mind paying more for stuff made in the United States if my wages are higher, if I've got a decent job making.
I'm with you on that,
too.
I'm totally with you on that.
I still think it's possible to roll back the clock. But, I don't know. We'll see. Anyhow, it's an interesting topic. Jim Tripon, TRIPPON.com, his website, his new book, Become Your Own China Stock Guru, The Ultimate Guide to Profiting from China's Economic Boom. His newsletter is there. Jim, thanks for dropping by today.
My pleasure, Tom.
Great conversation. 16 minutes past the hour. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. TomHartmann.com for our live chat room. And AirAmerica.com for the blogs and all things Air America.
The Tom Hartmann Program, taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day.
5 days a week.
Let me take
So John McCain opposes equal pay for women. But, you know, what an appropriate time. As a woman is running for president, Republican John McCain campaigning through poverty-stricken cities and towns. Isn't that noble of him? I mean, you know, you marry somebody worth $100 million and you use that to fund your political campaign, and you staff yourself with lobbyists and suck up to corporate America your entire career. And then when it's time to run for election, you go out in the poverty stricken cities and towns and look at the ravage that has been brought about by Reaganomics that you espouse. Said Wednesday he opposes a Senate bill that seeks equal pay for women because why? It would lead to more lawsuits. This is like saying that that he's opposed to a law that says that it's against the law to stick up 7-Eleven stores because it would lead to more prosecutions. Right? Let's just say that there should be we don't need any laws against robbery. I mean, after all, it's gonna make the police have to work harder. Let's do away with the crime of, I mean, fill in the blank. I mean, this is a white-collar crime. Okay, so let's say that, you know, discrimination, gender-based discrimination, it's a white-collar crime. So let's say bank fraud. You know, it's a hassle. You got to investigate, and a bank behaves fraudulently, that leads to lawsuits. They could be sued. Or investor fraud, you know, Enron kind of stuff. Oh, we shouldn't outlaw that. Why? Because if it's against the law, then people who get screwed, the investors, the people who get stuck with this thing, they can engage in a lawsuit. Oh, we can't have that. Senate Republicans killed the bill Wednesday night on a 56-42 vote. Well, that means a few Democrats there were with them. Majority Leader Harry Reid had delayed the vote to give Hillary Rodham Clinton and Barack Obama. This is interesting. The article spells out Hillary's all three names, but not Obama's. Time to return to Washington to support the measure, which would make it easier for women to sue their employers for pay discrimination. McCain skipped the vote, but said nonetheless he was opposed to it. Why? Well, he says, you know, women need education. Yeah, that's the solution to everything. Education. Send our jobs to China. Let's just educate people. Now, we're not going to pay to educate people, but we need to educate people. All the jobs are in China. All the schools are in Europe. I mean, you know what? If you want a free education or in Japan, it's crazy. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Karen in Olympia, Washington, listening on KTPK Talk 1090. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Hi. How wonderful to get on the air. First of all, thank you. I'm so grateful for Air America and personally grateful for what you do. Your great intelligence, your breadth of knowledge, your wonderful sense of humor. It's great. I love it.
Thank you.
What I want to say is that I love Hillary Clinton. I also like Barack Obama, and I'd vote for either one of them. But my elevator speech is that after reading My Life, which, of course, is a tedious tome, but...
You're talking about Hillary Clinton's autobiography?
No, sorry. Bill Clinton's. Yeah. I was so impressed with the period of time between the election and the inauguration. That really impressed me. They spent a lot of time talking about how they figured out who to appoint. They used such intelligence and
how to govern in other
words. Exactly. Because we're not electing one person. We're electing a huge team of people that are going to, I mean, one person isn't going to change everything. It's going to take a huge, huge team of very intelligent, capable people to solve all the problems and kick all the bums out of the departments that need to be kicked out, you know, out of. So I'm really impressed with their depth. And I think that Hillary would have a fantastic cabinet and a fantastic way of appointing people to the various departments that need to be appointed and to clean up the mess. And so that's my elevator speech.
Okay.
But I think she has more depth than Barack Obama does.
All right.
But I love them both.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Karen. Great to hear from you. Haley in Austin, Texas. Hey, Haley, we've got a minute here before this break. Haley? No, Haley. All righty, let's try Zed in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Zed.
Hey, good show as always, Tom.
Thank you.
I'll be real quick here. You know, the way you fight a swift boat attack is not by getting bogged down in the details. You know, people's eyes just glaze over when you explain I was against it before I was for it. The way you fight a swift boat attack is by appealing to a greater truth. You know, run a montage of past Willie Horton swift boat ads and then simply, you know, say at the end of it, those who oppose us will say anything to win.
Yeah.
Just remember that next time they try to tell you a lie.
In other words, call them out on the tactic.
Exactly.
Rather
so.
Than rebutting the details of the content.
Exactly so.
Yeah.
And in that regard, I do think.
That's what Barack Obama was trying to do in the last debate. You know, he kept saying to them, you know, these are the same kind of distractions. And he tried to call, but I think he should have been far more, you know, outraged and emphatic at calling him out on the tactic.
Absolutely. I will say one other thing, though, and that is that I think that. Unfortunately, I would vote for either candidate, but I think that Hillary is a little bit crippled by the fact that the Clinton brand name, you know, is associated not so much with truth-telling due to things like the meaning of is.
Yeah, it is tarnished. On the other hand, I think that there is a huge, and thank you, Zed, I think there's a huge reservoir of recollection of good economic times that you can draw on. So it's probably, you know, flip a coin. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I'm out on the street and I sleep in the park. Since my hopes melted down into this shopping cart. My world's a place where living's an art, but I could still come back.
34 minutes past the hour. Now, here's the thing that I think is actually harming the Clinton brand. I think that the kind of talk that you're going to hear here in this conversation between Terry McAuliffe and Andrea Mitchell of NBC News is the kind of conversation that, you know, Terry McAuliffe is coming across, in my opinion, as a used car salesman. And, you know, hey, I just talked to the manager in the back, and we got a special deal for you. You know, if you, and wait, it's just, well, you can make up your own mind. Here it is.
That 122,000 more people have now voted for Hillary Clinton than voted for Senator Obama. In Florida, yes, we won that by 300,000 votes. You mentioned Michigan earlier with Senator Biden. Let's be clear on Michigan. Senator Obama was on the ballot. He chose for political purposes. One, he thought he was going to get beaten in Michigan. Number two, he wanted to curry favor with Iowa, New Hampshire. He took his name off the ballot. Let's be clear, Andrew. I've been in politics a long time. You don't take your name off a ballot if you think you're going to win the state.
Well, there was a pledge there, and it was obviously trying to appeal to people in New Hampshire and to Iowa.
That's
all
right.
The candidates took themselves off. She was the only one who left herself off.
God bless Hillary Clinton. You know what? Because she knows how important Michigan is. These people went out and voted. They voted. These votes were certified.
Mm-hmm. So, no, she did. She intentionally left her name on the ballot after all the Democrats agreed to take their names off the ballot. I mean, I think, Terry, you're shooting yourself in the foot. I think you're shooting Hillary in the foot. Why don't you talk about her health care program? Why don't you talk about the kind of governance that she would do? Why don't you talk about the horrors of a McCain regime? I think that an opportunity is being lost here and a party is being harmed by Terry McAuliffe-style campaigning, and I think that Hillary Clinton is better than that. Nancy in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Tom. Thank you and Louise and your great crew for all that you do for our country.
Well, thank you. And let's not forget Sean Taylor, our producer, and Chris and Lauren here in New York, Chris Rosen and Lauren Kirshner. And we've got a great crew.
Amen,
wonderful
brother.
People.
And the Portland crew, too. I'm picking up here on one of your ideas, Tom. Hillary Clinton has challenged Barack Obama to two debates in Oregon. Barack has declined.
Yeah.
What if Barack said that he is not willing to be poster boy for the negative TV ads for McCain and the Republican Party that Hillary has been creating in her debates with Obama? Barack has refused to sink to trashing the Democratic Party in that fashion. What if Barack followed your suggestion, Tom, of debating with Hillary only against Bomb McCain and more of the same, instead of smearing negatives all over the Democratic Party before the nation?
Yeah. Good idea, Nancy. I think the bottom line here is that the underdog always wants there to be a debate because it's a great way to get publicity that you don't have to pay for. And that's certainly, in my opinion, what Hillary Clinton is trying to do. I'm not sure that we will be well served at this point going forward by any further debates between these two because we know their positions on the issues. And in fact, we know them so well that arguably in the last debate, they just devolved into gotcha politics, you know, Charlie and George just doing gotcha Republican talking points. And I certainly don't want to see a repeat of that. I really don't. Marty in Los Angeles listening on K-Talk. Hey, Marty.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm the son of a union organizer, and my mother and sisters have been involved in the women's movement and are proud feminists to this day. I was raised on the principle and the ethics that you just do not race bait, you do not use McCarthy-like tactics, and even more so against a young African-American guy like Obama who doesn't have a mean bone in his body. So when you and other people say that we have, you know, two good candidates and I will still vote for Hillary, I just don't understand that given the continued pattern by the Clintons and her surrogates. You know, it really, I believe, is unforgivable. I won't vote for McCain either, don't get me wrong. I defended the Clintons in the past. I was a defender of them when the same tactics were used against them. So now for them...
Marty, I think everybody has a line. You know, everybody has a point where they say, okay, you know, the line has been stepped over. And I know that many of our listeners feel, as you do, apparently, that the Clinton campaign, if not Hillary Clinton herself, have stepped over the line in, you know, particularly Bill Clinton's comments, or comments that could be taken as playing the race card, that kind of thing, and that's wrong. In my mind, they're awful close. They're awful close.
Right.
I'm not willing to say that I've stepped over that line, but I and frankly, I the position that I've taken all along is that I respect the intellect of my listeners enough to believe that if I simply talk about what I'm seeing out there and just lay it out, people can draw their own conclusions. And a well-informed electorate, as Thomas Paine said, is the necessary precursor to a self-governing nation, and that people can just make up their own decision. And apparently you have. Me personally, it hasn't hit that point yet. I'm still looking at both of these people as viable candidates. The story that I tell myself when I see Hillary's campaign or Hillary Clinton fighting this hard is that, okay, we need somebody who's going to really take names and kick butt when it comes to John McCain. And why isn't Barack Obama being a little more aggressive in some of these areas? And that's not an endorsement of Hillary Clinton at all. On the other hand, I deplore some of the tactics that have been used against Barack Obama that are implicitly, I think, Republican talking points and implicitly, or very subtly, but implicitly racist. So, I think it's possible to condemn the campaign's behavior and still think that the candidate might make actually a good president.
Well, possibly, but again, and I think, Tom, you generally are very sympathetic to this, that, again, race baiting and a pattern of it, as well as these fear-mongering tactics, especially from people that know better, are really shameful. And at a certain point, I think a line does need to be drawn then, because what's the difference then between progressives and Republicans?
Well, that's there's a million differences between progressives and Republicans. But I agree with your point that the line needs to be drawn. And what I've been saying, and I'll be completely transparent here about my preferences. And Marty, thank you for the call. Just lay it out, or my actions rather. And I guess it's a matter of public record anyway. And that is that I've been watching this thing by, originally I was with Dennis Kucinich on the issues, and I thought that John Edwards would make a great president. And I think Dennis Kucinich, frankly, would probably make a relatively good president, but I thought John Edwards would make a brilliant president. Although I never endorsed him, but he was on the program a couple of times. He was one of the few candidates. He and Barack Obama and Chris Dodd were the only candidate, or the among the few candidates who were willing to come on the program without requiring that I use scripted questions and not do follow-ups and all that kind of nonsense, which I just will not do. And so now it got, and in fact, I contributed, and I told my listeners on the air every time I did it, I could five different times. I contributed to the Edwards campaign twice. I contributed to the Kucinich campaign when they did things I thought worthy of my going to their website and clicking the button and sending them anywhere from $25 to $100. And twice now, when Barack Obama gave his speech in Philadelphia about race, after I heard that speech, I went to his website and I donated $100 to him. And when he came to Portland, Oregon, and he gave an absolute brilliant barn burner speech, and I went to his website and I contributed money to him. And I have been saying ever since then, I am waiting to hear a speech from Hillary Clinton that will inspire me enough that I'll go to her website and contribute money to her campaign. I would love to hear that speech. And I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting. Gene in Linwood, Washington. Hey, Gene.
Hi. It should be abundantly clear that Hillary is more hawkish than Bush. And what's it going to take? What's it going to take? I say this about people about Bush.
You're talking about her statement about obliterating Iran?
Well, she even went further during that last debate and said that she would intervene in any wars in the Middle East between different countries. And that's the 8,000-pound elephant that went in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And yet nobody follows up on that. And I have another question for you.
Well, we discussed that on this program. I asked the question, is she rewriting our foreign policy? Do we have... And I, frankly, I was astounded that the corporate media didn't bother to ask, are you proposing that we should have treaties that would codify this, that would make this a legal requirement that if Saudi Arabia, for example, is attacked by anybody, by Iran, for example, or by fill in the blank, Indonesia, I don't know, that there's going to be a massive retaliation?
But aren't you a little bit more than outraged at
I am very concerned about it, Gene. I am hoping that this is just campaign rhetoric.
And she's backed by Monsanto and a military-industrial complex. I mean, that's her, she's getting funding from her backers are the military. And I have another question.
Not entirely, but it does concern me that she's taking PAC money and she's taking lobbyist money, and I think that it's a great and honorable thing that Barack Obama's not.
And how about this thing about Peter Paul? She's had this, the mainstream media ignores massive campaign finance fraud by Hillary. How come that never gets mentioned? Is that a taboo?
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. I'm frankly not familiar with the story, Gene. I'm sorry. But, you know, let me check it out. There are so many of these kind of salacious headline things that come down the road. You know, how come nobody did this? It's hard to sort out what's actually legitimate and what isn't, but I'll check it out. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
I live right here with you. Walk the same as you do. I don't believe that we're so different. I live right here with you. Yes,
it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, powered in part by Teamsters for Change. It's a time for change in Washington. You can find out more at teamster.org. The Tom Hartman Program, TomHartman.com, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, AirAmerica.com, and, boy, a lot going on here. Tommy in Eureka, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Tommy, what's up?
Hello?
Hey, you're on the air.
Good golly, I'm finally on. Hey, I think a lot of your callers have made an excellent point about their being turned off towards Hillary. That's certainly the case with me. I was pretty equal on him early in the race, and I think that the ultimate problem, even if you might agree with, you know, most of us can agree their policies are essentially very, very similar, is it's a matter of candor. And at this point, I think we probably all agree that she would almost say anything she can think of if she thinks it'll help her win. And I don't see that sort of candor as stopping at the door to the presidency. And we just put up with eight years of saying one thing and doing another thing. I think I'd like an end to that. I'd like what comes out of the mouth to be the thing we follow through with.
This is, you know, to say that somebody would say anything, I think is a little hyperbolic. But to say
with plagiarism charges,
she's really pushing
the comical, zany stuff that she's done.
Oh, I know. She's really pushing the limit, and especially saying, oh, I've got more votes than Barack Obama. I mean, come on, give me a break.
That's just the newest thing.
Yeah, I know. And it's very problematic. And as I said, I think that she is shooting herself in the foot. I think that she's harming herself. It boggles my mind that somehow somebody has convinced her, whether it's Mark Penn or Terry McAuliffe or whatever, that being disingenuous is going to cause people to think that you should become president of the United States. I don't think it works. I don't think it will work. So anyhow, Jeff in Denver, KKZN. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, I'd like to defend caucuses as actually in general being more democratic than primaries for several reasons.
Okay.
Now, as far as we're concerned, we actually had a very high percentage turnout. We have a few hundred people in our precinct and almost 100 people there in the caucus.
Wow.
People in wheelchairs are there. People brought their children so they could learn about such things.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody gets to stand up if they want to and make a speech about the candidate. And there are candidates themselves there. There are reps for the candidates. So people get educated there. And we saw people change their minds. It's very much the Athenian democracy type stuff.
Yeah.
And so, also, if you're talking about IRV, what happens is, like, if you don't reach a certain threshold for your candidate, you're there seeing what the other candidate's support is. So, for example, with me, I supported Kucinich. He didn't have enough to make the threshold. So I was able to change my mind, just like as if it was instant runoff voting, and go with another candidate.
Yeah, so the caucus system essentially is IRV, instant runoff voting.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. And you get to also decide on other things. I mean, other issues, you have to come in and present your own part with the platform so you can help create the party platform nationally.
Yeah, yeah.
And it goes on and on. There's all sorts of things you can do in caucuses that you never, ever get a chance to do otherwise.
Yeah.
I'd say it's much more toward the Athenian democracy.
I agree with you, Jeff. And thank you for calling and making the point. Very well said, as always. Alan in Gulfport, Mississippi. Hey, Alan.
Yeah, Tom. I called you on the 14th of April and predicted what would happen in Pennsylvania, which is what did. Sir, I need a red flag. The Republicans are counting the votes with those machines. Notice when you talk about caucuses, there are no machines in the room. There are no Republicans in the room. And look what happens. If you ask any of the pollster, have there ever been, since these machines have been in place, where a deviation from the anticipated is greater than the results? Has it ever been in the favor of a Democrat? Has it ever been, oh, geez, surprise, the Democrat won? Never.
Alan, you're singing to the choir. I wrote one of the very first articles on this topic back in 2002, pointing this stuff out for commondreams.org, and I wrote the piece that was published on Alternet, and the MoveOn.org actually solicited me to write it and sent it out to 3.5 million people in 2003 or 2004 about all the problems with electronic voting machines. I've been pounding on this issue. I think it's horrible that our elections have been privatized. I don't trust them. I absolutely agree with you that we have every reason to be very, very, very concerned. That said, we've got it. We've got these electronic machines in Pennsylvania, for example. We've got the electronic machines. I mean, in many states. What are we going to do? I think that we need to be talking about the issue, and we need to be raising it, and we need to be, as Mark Crispin Miller is doing a brilliant job of, and others. But at the same time, as Mark Miller points out, if they're going to steal 6 million votes, we have to show up 8 million. I mean, it's a real tough one. I mean, it's really infuriating. I wrote the piece back in the beginning that pointed out that Chuck Hagel, we had Charlie Matulka on this program 5 years ago talking about how he felt that he was the Democrat who ran against Hagel in Nebraska when Hagel was running and not revealing to people. And Chuck Hagel, who's turned out to be a relatively decent Republican, who was running and not revealing to people that he used to be the president of the company that is now known as ES&S, the largest voting machine company in the country.
One thing we could do, Tom, is that really concerns me, is we can stop this frame, as you like to call it, that we now accept as fact across the board in all the talk shows, everything, you can't depend upon the polls. The
yeah.
polls are meaningless. Forget about
right, which
polls.
Is absolutely nonsense. I'll tell you, when I lived in Germany, they count the ballots by hand. It's paper. It takes them a day or two to do it, but the results are issued within hours of the closing of the polls. Of the voting places, because they do exit polling, and the exit polling has never been more than 0.3% off in that country. And that typically that's the case all over the world. We go into third world countries and certify the vote based on exit polling, but in the United States in 1998 and in 2000, in those elections, that's when the exit polling started going south. It went so south, so bad, so fast, that the exit polling companies actually, by 2004, the 2004 election, they were basically out of business. They were like, we can't read this stuff anymore. And, you look at the red shift and you look at the states and you're going, yeah, there is something going on here. There really is. 57 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative con. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, let's take just a brief pause from the ongoing drama of the Democratic primaries and consider the future and fate of the world. I mean, is it worth fighting over an election if global warming happens, for example, and all our coastal cities are wiped out? There are some really serious, large issues that we need to be talking about, and many of them are things that we can actually individually do things about. Ed Begley Jr. is one of the folks who is doing it. He's got a new book out, Living Like Ed, A Guide to the Eco-Friendly Life, the actor, activist, and author. LivingLikeEd.com is the website. Hey, Ed.
Tom, thanks for having me on.
Great to be here. How hard is it to live green? And when you say that you live green, what are you talking about?
You know, what I urge people to do in the book, Living Like Ed, is just what I did in 1970. I was on a real budget. I was a struggling actor, didn't have a lot of money. So I picked the low-hanging fruit first. I did the cheap and easy stuff. And what that was in 1970 was, you know, recycling and composting and a bunch of other stuff. Nowadays, there's even more that you can do very, very cheaply. You can buy an energy-saving light bulb. You can get a bus pass if there's public transportation near you. You can ride a bike if weather and fitness permit. Home gardening, home composting, you know, simply unplugging things that you're not using, buying energy-saving appliances if you need to buy something anyway, and on and on. There's much that you can do on a budget, and a very modest budget even.
Mm-hmm. And there's also, it seems, that there should be a legislative agenda involved in this. For example, if my recollection is correct, about 10% of all the electricity we use in the United States is the result of what are referred to as parasitic devices.
That yes, is, vampire power, yeah. Parasitic devices,
right.
Things that suck from you and give you nothing in return. And so you can either unplug them yourself when you're not using them, or you can put them on little power strips, you know, go get one of those power strips, put all that vampire power on a power strip at your desk, all that stuff that's not doing a task at the time. Then when you need it, you flip it on and you get all that stuff back on. But when you leave the house, you retire at night, you don't need that stuff on, flip it off.
But the reason we have these external transformer power supplies that plug into the wall and continuously are draining small amounts of electricity, even when the thing that they're hooked up to, the you know, VCR, radio player, or whatever it may be, MP3 player, computer, isn't running, is because Underwriter Laboratories, UL, which is, you know, you have to have UL certification for all practical purposes to
right.
sell anything electronic in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
UL certification of a power supply, of something that plugs into the wall, is only necessary if it draws more than 50 watts. If it draws less than 50 watts, you don't have to have UL certification. So on any device under 50 watts, what they're doing is they're attaching these vampire power supplies rather than building the power supply into the device, even though building the power supply into the device might be cheaper, because that way they don't have to go through the whole song and dance of UL certification.
Right.
This is the kind of thing where it's just like CAFE standards, where if the government actually got involved and said, okay, we are going to require car companies to make more fuel-efficient cars, and if they don't, they're going to pay a penalty in terms of taxes. We're going to require Underwriters Laboratory to require electronic devices to be UL-listed all the way down to 0 watts, so there's no more vampire power out there. I mean, that's a step beyond just doing what you're doing in your home, and isn't that the kind of thing that we should be pushing our elected representatives to be doing and be talking about?
We should have as much legislative help as we can get. That's true, and we should enforce the current laws. We have lots of laws on the books right now that would be a lot more help if we had administration that wanted to enforce those laws. So there's that. We just did get a bit of a break with the CAFE standards, but they gave us something and they took something away.
Yeah.
They said that we can't regulate greenhouse gases, which is what the California law says, and what Arnold Schwarzenegger is in favor of as well as the California legislature. So, you know, they said better CAFE standards. That was good news. But we certainly don't want to get involved in any greenhouse gas regulation is what they also said, which was unfortunate. But we all need to do something. And there's so much that we can do now that will clean up the air in cities like L.A., Houston, and Bakersfield, lessen our dependence on Mideast oil, and put money in our pocket. And, oh, by the way, when you're doing all those things I just mentioned, you're also going to do something about global climate change.
Plus, in many cases, you're living a little less expensively. You can put a little more in the bank for a vacation or your old age, and nothing wrong with that.
That's what I did, Tom. In 1970, again, very little money. I did all kinds of cheap and easy stuff. Even the electric car I bought in 1970 was $950, and it was simply cheaper to fuel that car. That is to say, to plug it in the wall at 1970 kilowatt-hour prices. That was cheaper than 1970 gasoline, and it was much cheaper to service. There was no tune-up or oil change or fan belt or radiator flush or smog check. It was a very inexpensive car to operate, as my electric car today is, my Toyota RAV4, pure electric. And my wife has a Prius. For long trips, I take that. So I have perfect and full mobility around the country, and I just, you know, 300 days a year I drive my electric car or ride my bike or take the bus, And the rest of the time, I take her Prius on long trips, and it's very, very cheap.
Yeah, I see the GM is talking about, what is it, the Chevy Volt? I think it's they're going to be coming out with an electric car. I mean, there's some very encouraging signs here in the United States.
Definitely, definitely. We're headed in the right direction. There's a lot of bad news, certainly, but there's a lot of good news. We have four times the amount of cars in L.A. from 1970, yet we have half the smog. So we're headed in the right direction. We've gone halfway up that mountain. We have to go all the way and get some relief for the people living near those diesel facilities, near the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, and clean up some of that smog. We've got a ways to go, but we've proven that we can do it, and we didn't go broke doing it, Tom.
Yeah, well, and with regard to L.A., for example, and again, the whole political realm, I'm sure you're familiar with the story of GM and Firestone, was it, or Goodyear? Goodyear.
Yeah,
going in and buying up the
red car.
Yeah,
and lots of other. It was Missouri, Oregon, Washington, lots of other states too. They bought up public transportation systems throughout. They were each fined a dollar, I believe. The corporate officers involved in that.
Yeah.
It was Standard Oil of New Jersey, Firestone Tires. It was Mack Trucks and General Motors, I believe, were the people.
In fact, when they went into the communities saying, privatize your public transportation systems. We can run them more efficiently. They didn't say that they were going to take them apart. They said that they were going to run them better and expand them.
Right.
And then they did the opposite. They took them apart. What about, and this was, of course, back in the 20s, but
yep.
What about reversing that? What about, you know, putting public transportation back into place in Los Angeles? I mean, I every time I'm on the 405 during rush hour, I'm like, why isn't there a train here?
I know. In the newer freeways that we built, like the Glen Anderson Freeway, they put a green line right down the middle, and
yeah.
The red line will continue to expand. We will have a subway to the sea at some point, and the sooner the better. You know, I'm very lucky. I live in the Valley in Studio City, so I take that beautiful subway from Universal regularly. I take the natural gas bus to get there from Laurel and Ventura. You know, we have some good solutions now. I lobbied for years for the smaller bus to go over Laurel Canyon, so now people have a way to get over Laurel Canyon. We can do this. We just have to set about doing it, make sure we earmark money for that, and get some good public transportation. It's very possible.
We're talking with Ed Begley Jr., the author, activist, actor. His new book, Living Like Ed, A Guide to the Eco-Friendly Life. The website for it is livinglikeed.com. Ed, to what extent, Arnold Schwarzenegger is a Republican.
Right.
And he's talking green.
Yep.
I'm seeing all across the country, not just Democrats. This is no longer a Democratic-Republican thing in many places.
Right.
How do we encourage Republicans to reject the money from the big oil companies and come along for the ride?
I think we have to make sure that they remember that they're energy companies. You know, IBM nearly lost, and they did lose a big part of the computer market for a while. They forgot that they were, they were in a different frame of mind. If they can still sell people a cool beverage and a warm shower and just do it more efficiently, sell them energy, sell them solar technology, sell them wind technology,
yeah.
Sell, the most energy efficient kind of technology, fuel cell technology. They're energy companies, and they're, some of them are starting to wake up to that. John Brown, when he was with BP, certainly understood that. He was the first one to say that global warming was real of any of the oil companies.
And so, BP is now the largest seller of solar power in the world, I believe.
Yeah, they
have solar cells.
And make a very good panel. I have some of their 90-watt panels. They're very, very good. And they have even better panels today than the ones I got years ago. So energy companies can do that. They have to remember what business they're in. It's energy. There's fossil fuels is the biggest part of it now. They should start moving as aggressively as possible in other directions.
And quit funding the global warming deniers.
Definitely. That'd be the first thing to do.
It's absolutely incredible, absolutely bizarre. Ed Begley, Jr., livinglikeed.com, the website for his new book, Living Like Ed, A Guide to the Eco-Friendly Life. Ed, keep up the great work, and thanks for dropping by today.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program right here on Air America Radio.
Common sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's talk about the radio. Sing the only songs you
7 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman program here, powered in part by Teamsters for Change. Time for Change in Washington, Teamster.org, the website, 866-303-2270, our phone number, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com, our websites. A lot going on in the world out there and in the economy. Glenn in Forest Grove, Oregon. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hello?
Yeah, Glenn, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Sorry. You threw me off when you talked to Ed Begley there. There already is a solar program in this country. They raise the tax credits federal level and state level.
Mm-hmm.
And the program is so successful that if they don't renew the level of tax credits and financial reimbursements, the window will close at the end of this year.
Yeah.
And so if you call your senators and congressmen, state and federal level, and ask them to renew those tax credits, it'll carry on and it'll do a really good thing.
Yeah, I know that there's a company in Portland. I met with them that is solarizing nonprofits and doing it very successfully. It's basically a break even. In fact, in some cases, even a profitable thing.
Well, I'm doing it in a commercial sense for my company, and we're a manufacturing facility. And at a 200 kilowatt system, we're going to cut down 20-30% of our electrical usage because of that, and also. It's a no-brainer to do it, but the other thing I called about was Hillary and Obama, or Clinton and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
No, Hillary always uses the word I. Obama always uses the word we.
Mm-hmm.
You having a psychological background, I'm sure understand the difference between the two. In Hillary's case, she's surrounded by advisors that were around her husband when he was president, and I don't agree with a lot of the stuff he did when he was president in a policy sense. But she's like the Pied Piper. I would rather have somebody there who is working with all parties involved to make it right for all parties involved. I don't hate Republicans. I don't hate Democrats. I'm an independent, but I want everybody working together. And that's what Obama keeps talking about, is everybody working together to make it right for
everybody. He does, and he is calling for a new kind of politics, and that's one of the things that I find very appealing about him, and I think it really inspires a lot of people. Glenn, thanks for the call and your comments. Doug in Florida, hey, listening to WINZ on WINZ. The Florida perspective on Clinton claiming that she has the state? Doug?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Hey, you're on the air.
Something?
Thanks for waiting.
I didn't even know you were talking to me, and I'm going, my God, I waited so long, I'm going into a coma.
All right, sorry
look,
about
Tom,
that.
Before we say anything,
yeah.
This is the first time I ever pulled your show. I've listened to your show for years, and let me tell you, I love your show, and I really think you're doing a great job in every aspect of getting the news across to the people.
Well, thanks, Doug, and you're not going to say but?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So, what's your take on Hillary Clinton claiming that Florida's in her pocket?
Everyone has to give credentials, and I just want to let you know about myself and a little plug. One, I graduated CCNY School of Engineering. I graduated CCN School of Animal Research. I'm writing a successful book. Hopefully it's going to be successful by Random House.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Doug. Doug, what is the point, though, of your call? You wanted to make a point.
All right. You want to get to the point, eh?
Yeah. I got a bunch of other callers here and not a lot of time.
The point is you cannot believe anybody until you see their credentials. One must present who they are and credentials to back it up.
Okay.
I could talk to you.
No, I got it, Doug, and I appreciate it. So we need to look at the credentials of presumably Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, I would guess. Thanks for the call. James in Phoenix. Hey, James.
Hi, Mike. I really enjoy your show. I listen to it every day. I've told all my friends about it. However, my point is I did not enjoy watching Gore, election being stole from Gore.
Yeah, neither did I.
I am not enjoying Hillary trying to steal this situation from Obama. I voted for Bill Clinton twice, not once. Those Hillary supporters who are saying that Obama supporters are negative and all, they're forgetting one thing. Those people did vote for Bill Clinton twice, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting there saying that, you know, they're Hillary Clinton haters and all of this. They're forgetting that. Hillary's turning off people that loved her.
You're spot on, and I'm agreeing with you. This is why I am calling on the Clinton campaign to stop trying to take down Obama and his campaign and start trying to take down John McCain.
To be and I have one more other point. I find it very hard to vote for Hillary now, and I loved those people at one time. Now watching them, I'm like, I can't believe these people exactly like the Republicans.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy of it. When I hear when I heard Terry McAuliffe and that, you know, the clip that we played earlier on the show, I'm like, oh no, not this again. I mean, come on, Hillary, you're better than that.
Exactly.
We're all like better than that. America's better than that.
I didn't like it from the Republicans. I'm not going to like it from the Democrats.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
For them to say a Barack is doing the same thing, I don't see it.
No.
I see her spinning things. I have more numbers than him. I'm like, you know what? Barack is just going through the motions of this because he has to. He's won this.
I think in all probability you're right, James. And I mean, obviously, the Clinton campaign is hoping that he's going to stumble badly. Something's going to blow up in his face. There's going to be some kind of a scandal. I think that's probably the only way that they're going to be able to pull this thing off. I doubt the superdelegates are just going to say, hey, wait a minute, I think we'll change our minds, or maybe America is all that racist, or something like that. I don't think that's going to happen. But the process is continuing, and so let's try to make it an anti-McCain process.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
It's your attitude! Indeed. And it needs a change. We need to change this country. We need to change our attitude. We need to change our government. We need to... Oh, man, there's so much. Where do you start? Well, Christy Harvey usually has some good insights on this. She's the Director of Strategic Communications at the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Also does MikeCheckRadio.org. And Christy, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
I am great, but
that's
I think probably to set this thing up, I should be going because that's kind of I'm making light of this, but people here in New York City, I'm doing the show today from New York.
Uh-huh.
I'll be home tomorrow. People in the city have died and are dying as a consequence of being at Ground Zero and being told by Christy Todd Whitman, the head of the EPA at the time, and the Bush administration, that there was nothing to worry about.
Yeah, and now she's off the hook, and I'm kind of upset about this. The U.S. Court of Appeals in Manhattan yesterday ruled that she could not be held personally responsible for, in effect, lying after Ground Zero, or after the 9/11 attacks, about the air quality at Ground Zero.
Right.
And they said, you know, she didn't mean to hurt anyone, and really she was just relying on the lies that the White House had given her, so it's not really her fault.
And that was enough to get her off.
That was enough to get her off.
This is the Eichmann defense, or whatever. It wasn't Eichmann, but you know, whoever the basically the Nazi war criminals. Oh, I was just doing what I was told. You know,
just following orders.
Yeah.
I also took it as, you know, the judge practically said, well, you know, the White House lies. You can't really trust anything they say, so you shouldn't be on the hook for it.
Shouldn't there be a chain? You know, a therefore in there, like therefore. Please, when you leave the court, Christy Todd Whitman, send the White House in because we'd like to talk to them?
Well, that's the thing, because back in 2006, the first judge to hear this case, which was brought by people who were actually suffering from lung problems and other respiratory problems from working or living near Ground Zero right after the attacks, that judge said that Whitman changing scientific statements that said there was danger showed, quote, It actually, quote, increased and may have, in fact, created the danger to people who lived and worked in the area.
Right.
And that's the thing. A study that came out last year showed that Ground Zero workers are 12 times more likely than anyone else to have asthma. 70% of everybody who worked or lived near Ground Zero has respiratory problems now. And we knew at the time that there were serious air quality problems. But the White House stepped in and stripped the danger warnings out of the report about the air quality and pressured Christy Todd Whitman to add falsely reassuring language about the safety.
So how did she not know that she was lying?
Well, that's the thing. You know, maybe she says that, you
didn't,
know,
didn't she in her autobiography write about lying about this?
She did. And basically what they're saying now is she was confronted with two sets of facts, one from the politicos at the White House and one from all the scientists. And what was she supposed to do? Just trust, you know, her bosses at
just
the White House?
Just trust the scientists. I mean, it's...
So, yeah, so this is pretty bad. And even back in just 2003, the EPA Inspector General was a woman named Nikki Tinsley, and she chastised the White House for pressuring the EPA to delete the danger statements from scientists out of the report and to put in fake everything's cool warning or assurations into the report.
Assurations?
I think I was going to say assurances, and then I messed up in the middle.
that's fine.
I was just going to go with it.
I thought there was a new word I didn't know.
There is now. I'm adding that one to the Harvey lexicon.
Okay. the Christy Harvey lexicon. I can see.
Oh, man.
Soon to be published by Random House.
Exactly.
The mustache of justice is getting involved with the CPA issue.
He is. And this is just other EPA stuff going on. This isn't even connected, really, believe it or not. But, the Union of Concerned Scientists have this new report that everybody should read. It came out yesterday, and it says that they did this big investigation into 1,600 EPA scientists. And over 800, 60% of them, said that they had personally experienced at least one instance of political interference into their work in the last 5 years.
Now, isn't that 60%. Against the law? I mean, are we talking about Hatch Act violations here?
Well, this is more the scientists' rights. Global warming is a horrible problem that we're facing, and the government says we're not going to release that report or we're going to cross it out. So it's not actually doing any electioneering. It's not exactly partisan, but it's just saying the White House doesn't want global warming to be an issue. The White House doesn't want the White House does want the power plants to be able to emit a lot of mercury into the air and not have to fix that problem.
Right.
And so when scientists, the White House doesn't want California to get that waiver. And so all of these scientists who are, you know, the wonky types, the ones who live in the laboratory and they don't have a political or policy agenda. They just, you know, they're in the lab. This is what it says. They look at the data. This is what it says. And they're angry now that, you know, the quality of their work has been damaged. By people who don't know anything about science but are trying to drive policy that benefits the Bush administration.
Jeez.
So the Mustache of Justice wrote a really nasty letter to...
This would be Henry Waxman for those who haven't heard us discuss this before.
Yes.
Congressman from California who is just, all of our heroes.
I have a big political crush on Mr. Henry Waxman, Congressman Henry Waxman. So he wrote this letter to the EPA head, Stephen Johnson, yesterday. And Stephen Johnson is up to his eyebrows in all of this. And said that, you know, he read this study from the Union of Concerned Scientists, and it suggests a pattern of ignoring and manipulating science. And he wants to know why and what and what's going to be done to fix it. So he was scheduled, Johnson was supposed to testify in front of Henry Waxman's Oversight Committee today, but that was postponed until the week of May 5th, so that's definitely one to TiVo. Or did I just out myself as a dork because I TiVo C-SPAN?
It's okay, I do too.
Oh,
do you think that this may be, you know, that on May 3rd, Stephen may come and say, let's make this June 5th. And then in June, he'll say, how about September? And then pretty soon the clock has run out and Congress has gone home and there's a new administration and he's out of office and he doesn't have to worry.
Well, most other people, I would say yes. But Stephen Johnson, luckily for us, is so arrogant that he always comes in front of these committees and just thinks that he'll be able to bluster and stonewall. But he hasn't really had terribly great luck with Henry Waxman because Waxman's a bulldog. He's not going to let it go. Yeah. And he's had Stephen Johnson in front of him to talk about the California emissions waiver and all sorts of stuff. So this is I don't think that Stephen Johnson's going to be smart enough to do that, which is good news for us.
If I may change the subject to John Yoo, speaking of people who are incredibly arrogant, having heard the guy speak and having met him once, and in fact, I believe he was on this program about 2 years ago. I may be wrong.
Yikes.
But, this is a really scary guy, I'll tell you. He just glibly and in this calm, reassuring way we basically just have to set aside human rights. You know, after all, we're in a war right now. And it's just, you know, the Constitution, that's a whole different, you know, after the war is over, we can talk about that. But for right now, we're going to put our hands around your throat and crush you. You know? Right. It's, and you're going, what?
Exactly.
And here's the guy who is the father, the godfather of torture in the United States.
Right.
And he is getting speaking fees and writing books, and he's teaching at the University of California at Berkeley. I mean, what's the deal?
Well, he was asked to appear in front of the House Judiciary Committee. Congressman John Conyers asked him to come and explain some of these memos, because he's the one who wrote all of the secret memos that, you know, every few months another one drops about how we torture, and he's the guy who actually wrote the memo that said that it's not considered torture unless somebody dies or has organ failure, in which case I always thought that was just called murder.
Well, in fact, it has been in several of these cases.
Exactly. So the Conyers wanted him to come and talk about this and explain to Congress what happened with these memos now that we know more about how the push to torture started at the top and trickled down as opposed to going the other way. And yesterday you sent his lawyer, he was supposed to come and testify on May 6th, and yesterday Yu's lawyer called the House Judiciary Committee and said, yeah, here's the thing, he's not going to be there. He's just not going to show up. He's, quote-unquote, not authorized by the Department of Justice to discuss this.
So is this executive privilege that he's invoking?
Sort of, yeah. It's just saying that it does not have the okay from DOJ to go over, and that's eventually going to be how they justify that. But John Conyers, another guy who doesn't like to let things go, has said, all right, we are not afraid to subpoena him. And so this could turn into one of those ugly legal battles, which
then
it should.
I mean, but right now, we've got subpoenas against Karl Rove and Harriet Myers that were issued. They were ignored. Congress passed a contempt citation and directed the Justice Department to throw their butts in jail.
Right.
They ignored the Justice Department, said, sorry, we're not going to enforce the laws made by Congress, even though the Constitution requires us to. And so Congress has been reduced to having to sue them in civil court for damages.
Yeah.
I mean, this is... I know I'm sounding like Lou Dobbs here, but, I mean, this is absurd.
Well, it is. And as Conyers put it, you know, this is a stain on our democracy to have all of this stuff going on and absolutely no accountability for it. All you can do is keep trying.
I think Congress needs to pass some sort of legislation making it impossible for George Bush to pardon people. Because that's, you know, he's just going to walk out the door and pardon all these guys, and we'll never get to the bottom of this stuff.
Come on, everybody, we're free now? Yep.
Indeed. Christy Harvey with the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. Thanks, Christy.
Thanks a lot.
Great talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
So fairy was the mercy, and always take me there, the place I love. People around every corner seem to smile and say, we don't care what your name is, boy, we'll never turn you away.
Boy, I am 12 years old again. This is an oldie but goodie. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. And Eleanor Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with you, with us. Hey.
Well, yes, quite a bit going on today. The FCC, as you know, has had a rule that you could now own newspapers and radio and TV stations in the same market. Well, the Senate Commerce Committee has decided to overturn that. Of course, I'm sure the Republicans will try and stop it when it gets to the full Senate.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And, of course, the president has also threatened to veto it. So that is happening on that front.
I think, you know, there's so many of us are going to be so happy when 2009 arrives. I hope.
Yes, I'm looking forward, I hope, to January 20th, and I'm hoping you come out for the inauguration.
Oh, we should talk about that. That would be very interesting. I've never done that.
It's great fun. Okay. The Democrats took a big aim at the issue of oil and gas prices today, which the Republicans have started to call Pelosi's premium. because she promised to get oil and gas prices down.
So you know, I'm reading some investment newsletters out here that are suggesting that perhaps as much as $40 to $50 of the per barrel, $40 to $50 of the cost of oil is the result of speculation, is the result of people trading in oil, and that this goes back to the deregulation of the commodities markets in the last year of the Clinton administration in 2000. There was a massive deregulation of the commodity markets, and the government not only no longer has the oversight that they used to at the level of detail, but they don't have enforcement powers and legal authorities that they used to for stop things like market manipulation that, for example, Enron was doing. You know, Enron drove up the cost of energy.
Oh,
like
yeah, they sure did. Well, today, that did not come up, but what did come up is the Saudis and UAE's and everybody's oil production. Apparently, between 2005 and 2007, there's 800,000 barrels a day that the Saudis are not producing that they produced in 2005, but not by 2007.
Right.
And then the several senators led by Schumer, Dorgan, your very own senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders, said that it is time to say we are not going to sell these guys weapons unless they start stepping up oil production and don't become essentially, you know, petro-greedy.
Yeah, well, the big question is Saudi Arabia. I wrote about this in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Back in 1983, I think it was, the Saudis and were in need of, they wanted to borrow some more money, and the only thing that they could borrow money against was their oil reserves, and they weren't the only one. There were about half a dozen Middle Eastern countries that were looking to the World Bank for cash, and they all, within a month of each other in that 1 year, they all upstated their reserves by about 25-30%. And there was no evidence that they actually had those increased reserves, but they were able to borrow more against them. And now we're finding that it's getting harder and harder for them to pump oil out of some of these fields. It looks like they might be at or near peak oil in Saudi Arabia, and maybe even on the backside of the curve. There's a lot of speculation that the Saudis are trying to cover up the fact that the reason why they're not producing this additional oil is because they don't have
it. Yes,
right.
Well, you know, and it didn't, that certainly did not come out in the Democrats' conference. There is a Republican who, in my view, remains one of the few lone voices out there on this issue. Roscoe Bartlett, you ought to get him on air on this. He's the only member of Congress that's saying we're in big trouble.
Really?
Because of it. The world is in big trouble.
With regard to peak oil?
That's right.
Roscoe Bartlett,
he's a PhD in some kind of science, and he is the lone ranger on this issue.
Well, we will have to track him down. Thank you for the tip.
Okay, and also, apparently, Nancy Pelosi and others today said, and she had a press conference with Take Your Kids to Work Day, which, by the way, the Republican, you know, Bush is not even mentioned. Under the Clinton administration, they used to have huge events on the lawns, et cetera, on the lawn about this. But she allowed younger children to ask her questions at the press conference. It was actually quite cute. But she said today that the strategic oil reserve is 97% full, and we are still adding to it.
Interesting.
On a daily basis.
Yeah. Now, by the way, speaking of the White House and the lawn and all those kinds of things domestic with regard to the White House, last night on Larry King's program, Larry King asked Laura Bush who she'd be supporting in the 2008 election, and she said, well, the Republican, of course, you know, implicitly John McCain. And then he turns to Jenna and says, and who are you supporting? He says, I assume you're supporting the same. And she says, no, I'm not really sure. And her mother looked at her like, what?
I didn't see that. I saw a transcript, but I didn't actually see the face.
Oh, you got to hear this, Ellen.
Do you have a favorite between the two Democrats?
My favorite is the Republican.
Yours too, I would imagine.
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, you know.
Are you open to?
Yeah, of course. I mean, who isn't open to learning about the candidates? But...
Right. Who isn't open to? Well, your family's not. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, she won't talk about her opinions on the war either.
That's interesting.
Also, several members of Congress sent a letter to the Justice Department, actually to Mukasey, on the National Voter Registration Act. Voter registration has actually gone down from 2.6 million in 1995 to only 550,000. They're supposed to do voter registration cards in places like the DMV. It isn't happening.
Interesting, interesting. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service. We'll have to follow up on that one. Thank you so much, Ellen.
Thank you.
TalkRadioNews.com. Coming up tomorrow, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your questions, talking about what's really going on in Washington. Plus, Anything Goes Friday. You choose the topics. I'll choose a few, too. Plus, the best of the rest of the news and your calls. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.